Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Mormon Matters Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Weatherspoon, and I have a panel of just really, really wonderful people today. The group that I've gathered are three parents who got a had a conversation with their child, one of those difficult things. You know, in life, there's all these important milestones for a parent and a child. At first, a child's so dependent upon you, and then slowly they, you know, potty train, and they learn to walk, and they begin to explore, and yet they're always looking to see if you're there. And the next thing you know, their independence is growing. Then there's all these important psychological differentiations that kind of come as you move into adulthood with any child. And hopefully those things all go well, that you have a great parent and child relationship that becomes more adult to adult. Now, among the things, though, that sometimes happens in a life, but it's not all that common, is a child will come to a parent, and hopefully in a good, positive way, they'll say, "I love everything about my life, and you've been such a great parent, and all the values that you've taught me are things that I really, really like, but my life experiences led me in a different direction," and they begin to explain how they've differentiated from you in some fundamental ways. Sometimes, it can be traumatic if it's political differences. I know that a lot of younger people will often radicalize, a little bit more than their parents, and so that's difficult enough. But then when you get into religion and a worldview, and especially these really all-encompassing religions like Mormonism, and where there's a lot of I don't know if it's unwritten peer pressure among parents to have children that they all bring to the temple or they all serve missions, and there's sort of this unspoken status that can sometimes get involved, and so it can become really, really loaded when a child comes to a parent and says, I've lost my faith, or I see the world of Mormonism differently, or I'm having doubts. There's all sorts of different levels of the way they might break these news to a parent and how their journey might go. So I've got three wonderful panelists today who have all had that quote-unquote the talk with their children, and at least one of their children in these cases, and we're here to have them tell their stories of receiving that news. You know, what it was like, what the thoughts were that were going through their head, how it affected their own walk and journey within Mormonism, if it has. What is it that they hold on to in terms of thoughts or teachings that make them still be very affirming and loving, and, you know, no question that you're still my child, you're still my golden boy. In this case, I just realized it's all boys, but I know it happens, plenty of women have these talks with their parents too. But anyway, so I'm just excited to have Geralee, Jim, and Terry with me. We're going to not use last names, but everyone has indicated that if anybody wants to talk with any of them afterwards, we can all broker conversation through me, and they'll be happy to identify themselves more fully to you and engage you. So, Geralee, would you mind just giving us a quick hello and stuff about your life?
Sure. Hi, Dan. It's nice to be here with you and Jim and Terry, and, you know, a little out of my comfort zone, as you know, but, you know, if this is ever anything that could help somebody else, I'm so happy to be a part of that. So I born and raised in the church, very, very ideal childhood, wonderful parents, deeply in love with each other, felt like I did all the right things, and, got married in the temple to an incredible, supportive husband, have four amazing children, all grown, all married, who are very unique and very different from one another, but love and admire the differences, and have really found great ways to be able to stay together as things have changed in their lives, and to love one another as siblings, and I appreciate that. you know, always had a great positive experience in the church. I've served in just about every leadership position that a woman in the church can, in the ward and the stake. My husband's been a bishop. Just really, you know, happy, just happy, happy raising our kids in the church and very trusting in all things church. Looking back now, I find that I would classify myself as having been very black and white, but believing in all things, you know, just faith has kind of always been a very easy thing for me. And I feel strongly that, you know, raising my family in the church was an important duty as well as, you know, something that I loved and enjoyed.
Awesome. Thank you. Jim, we'd love to hear a little bit about you and your background.
Okay. My wife and I have seven children. She passed away back in 1996, but before she passed away, well, first of all, let me say that of the seven, three were boys, and all three served honorable missions. And we had one daughter who left the church right after high school, not because she left the church per se, but because of a boyfriend who she fell in love with more than she did the church, and she went with him. And anyways, we have a good relationship, but she's not a member of the church. And then our oldest son served an honorable mission, and when he came back, he went to BYU, and somehow, I don't know what happened, he got caught up in some of the anti-Mormon things, and after he graduated BYU and went on to graduate school, he too left the church. Now, that one was hard on both me and my wife, particularly her. I was kind of in the middle on that one. And it took a while for us to resolve that, because when the daughter left, it wasn't because she... It was just a different kind of leaving.
Yeah, it wasn't a rejection of beliefs or things as much.
Precisely. And it took a while for my wife to get used to it. And before she passed away, they did make up and express love for each other and so forth. Now, with Randy, the one you know, that one came as a real surprise to me. Now, Randy was my little Joseph, my favorite, easily my favorite. We just kind of got along. I helped coach him. I got involved with him in football and in baseball and whatever he got involved in with. And he served an honorable mission and got married in the temple and so forth. And when he came to me about, I guess it's been about 2 years, I was not ready. I had not recognized the signs. I was very negligent in that sense, because when I look back over it, there were signs. And but anyways, I had already had the experience, so to speak. So anyways, I'm suppose we'll get into how it is that we came to deal with it. But I have come to deal with it, and we still have a magnificent relationship. In fact, we every other year we and one of his brothers go to South Bend, and we go to the USC Notre Dame football game and have a wonderful time as father and sons. But my activity in the church, I got my testimony really on my mission, and it was the greatest decision I ever made, was to go on that mission. And I've served in all kinds of positions, bishoprics four times, high council, so forth. And I've been a seminary teacher now for 13 years. So I have a strong testimony of the church, and just have to deal with the situation as it is. That's my story.
Awesome, awesome. And we'll unpack it more, too. So thank you for joining us. And especially, we had delayed this a few days because you're battling pneumonia. So we really appreciate you hanging in here when you're not feeling super well. Terry, tell us about your life.
Well, my family joined the church when I was about 8 years old. And so first formative years of my life, I went to different churches, and so joining the Mormon Church was a big event in my life and a big contrast. I saw my parents change, and we all made changes, and learned about the prophet and following the prophet and just all kinds of new things going on in my life. And so I slowly, at that point, developed faith in my parents and what they were teaching me until eventually I developed my own testimony. And my family was really good about following the prophet and having family home evening and scriptures and prayer night and day together as a family and doing those things. And my mom's first calling was Relief Society president, and they just jumped in, and we all did, and all my brothers both served missions, and we all married in the temple, and I myself, you know, I'm a BYU graduate, and my husband was a BYU graduate also, and we married in the temple, and we started off being a good, you know, trying to follow the prophet, trying to do what's right, and having family home evenings, and scripture study, and things like that. And unfortunately, my husband died when my two boys were very young, and so most of their life, they were raised just by me, single mom. But we continued strong in the faith and had family home evenings, and I really tried to prepare those family home evenings, and we had scripture study at least 5 days a week, and morning and evening prayer, and just basically live the gospel. And, well, that pretty much tells you a lot about me right there.
When your son finally did come to you, your son's name's Rex, and when he spoke with you, was it completely out of the blue or something? We'll hear more details later, but I just want to get a quick feel of that. How many years ago was it and things like that?
You know, it was last summer that he told me, but probably about a year before that, I felt like we weren't really conversing. We weren't really talking about deep subjects, and I felt like he was... that our relationship wasn't as deep as it had been all, you know, throughout his life and my life. And so when he told me last summer, then it was like, oh, so that's it. And ever since he told me, then our relationship has been much better because he's been open. But he was actually kind of afraid to tell me because he didn't want to hurt my feelings, and he knew that how important the gospel was to me, and so he was really being sensitive to me. But it ended up being a good thing that he shared with me what was going on with him.
Well, thank you guys. I love those basic things, and especially about your own journeys growing up and, you know, the things that you were trying as parents to, you know, not have this particular type of differentiation happen in your lives. But now, if you don't mind, I'd love to just, we'll just go in the same order if that works for everybody. I would love to just maybe hear a 5-minute version of what was the circumstances of your sons telling you what they've told you, what was going through your head, you know, what were the major concerns that you had right off the bat. And then a little bit later, we'll go into a bit deeper. Charlie, if you don't mind, just tell us the basic story of your son's conversations with you and what's going on.
Okay. Well, just to tell you a little bit about Tyler, is a natural born leader, always been kind of our people magnet. People just love to be around him, very caring, very concerned about everybody. People from all walks of life were his friends in high school. We used to lose count at 100 kids in our backyard when he'd throw a party in high school. So, you know, just an awesome kid who always did everything right and came home from his mission. He was a great leader in his mission, had a great experience there, still close to his mission president today, and finished BYU and went on to graduate school to get a PhD, a doctorate program at UC Santa Barbara. So he was away at school in another state. We live in Utah, so we did a lot of communicating back and forth through email and telephone calls, and didn't see each other on a regular basis. But as he was in his doctorate program, I was sensing and hearing little things from him about some changes that he was experiencing and recognizing in his feelings. And I think the first thing that I realized was his feelings and his stand
about LGBT issues. So feeling differently than he had previously, being raised in the church about gay and lesbian people and our church's beliefs about it. And at that same time, I was kind of experiencing some similar feelings and questions because I had some family members and some really close friends with children. So these are all people in the church who were gay or lesbian. And I was very sensitive to the difficult position it is for a parent to experience this and remain active in the church and feel like this wasn't a place that their child could be. So we were communicating back and forth a little bit about that topic. And I would read something or hear something, I'd shoot him an email and he would do the same. And he was sending me links to things and at some point sent me this great podcast, or I don't think it was a podcast, and maybe it was an interview anyway with Bill Bradshaw. And so we were kind of sharing some new feelings for both of us about this issue. And kind of in that process, some, you know, just kind of naturally, some of his belief system tumbled out. And I remember the moment that I really realized, wow, this is a big change, being pretty devastating to me. And my husband was gone out of town on a business trip. So I was feeling kind of, and I didn't really want to talk to my husband about it over the telephone. So I was, you know, kind of trying to communicate back and forth with my son through the means that we had, but he wasn't right here to put my arms around or talk to. So, you know, he was expressing that he would prefer to talk more about this in person, but I pushed him a little and said, you know, well, what about this and what about that? So we kind of did that a little bit. And then as soon as my husband got back in town, we planned a trip to go visit my son. And but actually at this time he was doing an internship. So he was out of state and we went and visited him. And, you know, I was experiencing a lot of fear and a lot of, I don't know, maybe it was anxiety, but a lot of sadness about this potential change and what felt like a loss to me at the time. But you know, when I got with him person to person, I can't tell you, it was still hard and it was still a learning process, but how much better it was to experience and to feel his goodness and his spirit and his strength. And I also really sensed from him and being with him how difficult this was for him. And as a mother, I was very sensitive about that. And I, you know, I worried about him. I worried about his possible struggle with depression. And I worried about, you know, how he was going to hold it all together, because I realized that he was dealing with something that he described somewhat to be like the loss of a loved one. And I realized this was difficult. And so that actually helped me to feel that. And I also felt, I think this is important, I felt an appreciation for the honesty that he had to share with us as parents. You know, this is a grown adult child with who's married, has his own family. And, you know, he was opening up a very tender part of himself, excuse me, and sharing these things. And so I felt really grateful that we had that kind of a relationship, that he could do that with us, and that I had a, you know, responsibility to do the best I could as a mother with this son that I adored and do adore and love. Sorry, I'll try to pull myself together. Oh gosh, what else did you want me to talk about, Dan? Have I gone far enough?
That was wonderful. And so this was within the last 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, it was about a little over 2 years ago. Yeah, about a little over 2 years ago.
And one of the things about you, and you and I got to know each other maybe a year and a half ago, or what impressed me so much about you is not only obviously this feeling of his goodness and whatnot, you went ahead and got proactive. Do you mind sharing a little bit about some of the things that you were doing in terms of, you know, educating yourself?
You know, Dan Witherspoon is somebody that I love and adore, for all of you that are listening. And I found Dan through this process with our son, Tyler, because I didn't really know anybody who had experienced anything like our son was describing to us. And so I got on the internet and I started Googling things like faith transition. And I found John DeLynn's podcast. I think he's done it in several forms of why people leave the LDS church. And I thought, there's other people out there. He is not, other people have experienced this similar kind of thing. And I should say he hasn't really left, but it's, you know, it's definitely a transition in his faith. And it's a journey, and it's, you know, maybe somewhat of a roller coaster, and we don't know what's yet to come. But I found Dan. I listened to a podcast where Dan was being interviewed. I believe it was by John. Was it Dan?
Yeah.
And I was fascinated by the story because it, you know, it had some similarities to being in a doctorate program and having these changes. And I really appreciated hearing that. And I reached out to Dan because I just didn't know who to turn to. I was really searching for someone to be able to help me understand how I, as a parent, could deal with this without making this more difficult for my child that I could see was struggling. And so I, everybody's going to want to email you now, Dan, that I tell this story, but I sent an email to Dan, and I don't remember my exact words, but I basically told them the story and said, what advice do you have? What can I do? And I was so touched and so impressed that just within a couple of days, I got this beautiful, you know, thoughtful, long message back from a total stranger, someone I had never met, who was really taking an interest and understood and had some great advice for me. And a couple of the things that he said that really stand out to me now was, and I don't remember the exact words, but the gist of it was to honor his journey, my son's journey. And that was important to me to hear. And the other one was, and I love this probably the most, that there is great joy on the other side. And at a time when you're hurting and it's difficult, that is really a wonderful thing to hear. So I will always love Dan Witherspoon because of that.
Well, yeah. Thank you. I didn't plan to have that be as much about me as your answer was, but thank you. But I remember our friendship has been wonderful for me too, and it was just so neat. It was early in the Mormon Matters podcast, you know, was just getting going a few months and things like that when you reached out to me, and it was just like, oh, I've got to somehow let other people know that parents sometimes will take the journey with their child in some degree. And I do want to go back later. We'll get into more complex thing about your own changes in faith and whatnot and things like that. But just your saying you didn't want to reject, you just simply wanted to learn as much as possible was just, you know, I mean, that's kind of rare. I mean, I don't know if it's rare, but at least we hear the horror stories, and so it was fun to have your story and just to meet your heart through the correspondence. So, and then of course now we've been to dinner a bunch of times and things. We're all great friends now, and my wife loves and adores your family too. So, thanks, Jim. I want to hear basically the same pieces of the story with you and Randy and your journey and what were the thoughts and the initial experience of him coming to you with his changes.
Well, like I mentioned earlier, with Randy, I just totally blew it. I did not notice the signs or anything. He lived in Arizona at the time. In fact, I've since gotten remarried to a woman with four children, so we have 11. And at the time, four of them lived in Arizona. And when we ever we'd go over and visit, Randy and I would always go out to breakfast. And on one of those occasions, he said, "I just got to talk to you." And that's when he confessed that he was having problems. He kind of downplayed it, but I got the message. But I didn't know that it was as serious as it was. And we just had a talk, and he was grateful that I didn't reject him over it. I did accept the fact that he was struggling with the gospel and had problems with some of its doctrines and so forth, and I don't know exactly which ones they were that he was having problems with, but he had gone to a point where he was very close to leaving the church, and the next time we saw each other about 6 months later, he had left the church. And when we got together to talk about it, and you got to realize, if you know Randy, he's a very passionate person. Back in the Prop 22 days here in California, That was the first marriage, what do you call it, that was passed.
Ballot initiative, yeah, that was back in 2000.
Exactly.
Yeah, in 2000.
He was so passionate on getting signatures for that. He would come down, he lived up the street from us. He would come down, come on, Dad, we got to go out and get some more signatures. You know, he was that passionate. When we met and he told me that he had left the church and so forth, he, being a very passionate person, he was wanting to discuss all of these things. And I told him, Randy, I've got my testimony of the gospel. It took me a long time to get that testimony, and it's done miracles for me. It helped me find your mother. It helped me father all you kids. It has just found me happiness that I would not have had otherwise. The church is true to me, period. Amen. And I don't want to argue its points. But we've had all these years together as family. We have more memories than many families have with all of their kids. I mean, I followed him in everything, and we had some absolutely wonderful experiences together. Whenever he had a football game, I would stay up and wait for him to come home after the game, and we'd discuss all of the, why did you do this? What did the coach say when he came over to you, and blah, 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 and so forth. And we just had a marvelous experience as a father and a son. And we had no reason to destroy any of that. And I says, let's just make a deal. We're not going to argue religion, but we're going to talk family all we want. And we still have a great relationship. He's been very successful as an orthodontist, and he has done some wonderful things for me. I mean, he took us back to New York for the Syracuse USC football game, just so that we could see New York City and stuff. And we just had a marvelous time. And we still have that kind of a relationship, but I just don't want to deal with the religious aspect of it. And we've made that agreement, and we still have a good relationship. And there's certain things that I've picked up over the years that have helped me. I don't know whether you want to get into...
Let's wait on that, but yes,
okay.
That's great. And of course, in you probably being a seminary teacher for 13 years, you're at least probably aware of at least some of the Mormon-specific issues that might have been on his mind, but you didn't really want to still deal with those with him.
He had left the church. At the time he left, he was high priest group leader, and he went in and told his bishop that he had lost his testimony and so forth, and surprised a lot of people because he's a very generous person, very committed and so forth. But when it was over, it was over. And I just don't see anything gained to argue over the doctrines and stuff like that. He's already made up his mind.
And he didn't want to discuss those things with you as a way of getting you to leave the church. You didn't sense that. It was just more of, I want to be understood.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never thought of it that way. But I know with his siblings who are active in the church, he got kind of argumentative with them, and they just had to tell him, no, let's just leave religion out of it, and let's just, you know, leave it at the family level. And we have a good relationship now in the family. And we accept him as he is, and he accepts us as we are, too.
Yeah, let's leave it off for there, and we'll come back to the more of the specifics of you guys' own internal lives as you wrestle with this. Terry, would you mind sharing us a little bit about your experiences with Rex and the background and the initial stuff?
Sure. Rex has always been strong and always been very smart and capable and strong-willed. So I don't know, when he told me about his faith transition, it was a shock, but I was more hurt that he hadn't shared it with me earlier, that he felt that I wouldn't, that I would reject him, and it just made me feel sad that he didn't realize how much I loved him and how much I'm proud of him and how much I want him to be who he needs to be, and that his life might not unfold the way I would like it to unfold, but the love that I have for him will always be there. And I remember it really, I mean, it's not something a parent ever wants to hear, but I remember that it wasn't difficult for me. It wasn't a struggle, because I remember when he was much younger, I already dealt with this issue that no matter what, I was going to love my children. And I remember when his father was alive in the early years, I would sign him up for things like soccer. And his father thought that was terrible, didn't want him to do soccer. If he came to the game at all, he would come at the end and then complain that he didn't want his child playing soccer. And if I signed him up for baseball, that was fine. When I signed him up for theater, he just really didn't like that. And I mean, I was basically trying to expose my son to different things so that he could choose for himself, you know, what he liked and discover where his talents were. Didn't matter to me. I wanted exposure. I signed him up for Pangsudo class, and oh my goodness, he excelled at it. He loved it, and his father just really did not want him to do that. You know, he just wanted to be a football or baseball player. So, and I remember sitting down, even though he was probably 3, 4, possibly 5, and thinking, no matter what my son chooses, if he... And I thought of, you know, what might be hard for me to accept. And I thought, if my son decides that he wants to be a ballet dancer, if he decides that he is gay, if he decides something that's totally something I would not want for him, but he decides this at some point in time in his life, I will always be there for him, and I will always love him no matter what. So I crossed this bridge at his very young age, that no matter what happened in life, that I would be there for my sons, that I would love them no matter what. So it wasn't as hard for me to accept. It's not something I embrace and something I want, but the love I have for him is so much stronger than, and I will never reject my children over anything they choose.
Oh, thank you for those initial framings, you guys. I'm going to just, if you, all right, I just want to take you through a series of questions, because the reason I got the three of you on, because you've handled it in just wonderful ways. They're different ways, obviously, from each other with, in your initial reactions. And I think some of it is fed a little bit by how your sons shared with you. Like Jim, for instance, your son was out, where Geralee and Rex, I think your sons, from what I know of them, are still somewhat in the wrestle and in the journey, trying to figure it out. And it is interesting that we have a professional son in Jim's son, and then the other two of you are both children with students. I mean, Rex is in his PhD program, and Tyler is finished with his, right?
Yeah. Tyler's teaching.
Yeah, and so I know that grad school is a time of new theories and new framings,
yeah,
and stuff like that. So I have a feeling that's a piece of it. And then, of course, there's just temperament and personality, like with Jim saying that he has a passionate son who makes decisions and he goes for it, you know, all or nothing kind of guy. And so I think those are all nice pieces of it. But I know that in your hearts, when you all kind of talked about a level of sadness and devastation and things like that, let's just go through a series of possible reasons for that might be fairly common out there. So the first one is, let's think about salvation. So were any of your testimonies like, if you're not Mormon, or if you were Mormon at one time and you reject Mormonism, salvation is really messed up? Let's start with that. How big of a deal was that for you, Geralee, and how have you worked through it?
You know, it was something that I had the fleeting thought. I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about it. My husband, who is much less emotional than I am, said to me right off the bat, you know what, Tyler is such a good person that he'll probably get to the celestial kingdom before we do, no matter what he chooses in this life, because he's just that kind of a person. And that helped me a lot, actually, for him to kind of frame it that way. So I try not to dwell on that, because I really do believe that, you know, in the way that I see things in the church, that he will be judged for who he is, for his goodness. And you won't find a better person than this child. And, you know, there was kind of a realization for me at that moment also of, gosh, if it could happen to him, this is somebody who has just sought after and yearned for and worked hard for truth. You know, this was his goal in life, was to find truth. He came home from his mission just with a list of books. I want to read all these books. I'm just on this mission to find truth. And so, you know, I realized that he is who he is. And so I haven't spent a lot of time worrying about that kind of final judgment or feeling like I was going to lose him that way. But, you know, of course, there, you know, there's always some kind of thoughts or some, you know, fears. I did worry at first about how his siblings would handle it and how...
I want to get into that in a separate little thread, if that's all right.
Okay.
But right now on salvation. So, Jim, what about you? You'd kind of gone through it, at least with two of your other children. Was the Randy thing anything in terms of, oh, salvation is gone now for him if he doesn't, you know, eventually straighten the ship?
After my first son left the church, I was bothered. I was more concerned at the time about my wife and her reaction. I was kind of the middleman between them and so forth. But then I came across an article by Robert Millet. It was in a book of talk where he talks about, in fact, the title of the article is Securing Children Through the Covenant. And it talks about, it's just to quote one of the quotes, it says, when parents keep the covenants they have made at the altar of the temple, their children will be forever bound to them. The wayward children will have to pay their debt to justice. They will suffer their sins and may tread a thorny path, but if it leads at last to a loving, forgiving father's heart and home, the painful experience will not have been in vain. And that article has given me more satisfaction, but more comfort than anything that I've read. I just trust in God. I don't know how it works, why it works that way, but fortunately all of our kids were sealed to us, and I just trust that somehow in time, whether on this side or the other side of the veil, I don't know, these kids will come back. And that's where I leave my faith. And then there's one other thought that last year when I was preparing a seminary lesson, came across a quote from David O. McKay from, I think it was 1950 April conference. He said, next to the bestowal of life itself, the right to direct that life is God's greatest gift to man. So I have to back off and let my kids make their decisions. I did the best I could in raising them. I'm here to counsel them when they need it. But they're the ones that are responsible for their lives, and they're the ones that have to make those decisions. And those two, one article and one quote, have kind of put things in a perspective in which I can deal with it. Because, yes, I do take it. I, like the other sisters here, I have a strong testimony of the gospel, and I want to be there as a family.
Wonderful. Thank you. Terry, how about you and the salvation issue?
Yes, it bothered me and it went through my mind and I thought about it for days because it's, you know, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, he's made covenants and you don't break covenants, and I just felt bad. But then I just thought, you know, the more I talked to him, the more I realized that, you know, a lot of his things that he did, he based on faith, and things just in his mind weren't working out, and he didn't believe anymore, and he didn't think. And so I just feel like, you know, it's good that God will judge according to their heart, because I really don't know. And I know that his experiences are different than my experiences. And you can teach the gospel, and they can know the gospel, but if they don't ever, I mean, you can't give them spiritual experiences. You can't, those things just have to kind of come in time. And So there was an, I just had to accept the fact that, you know, that things will work out in the end. He's a good person, and he, you know, this is how his life is unfolding right now, and it's good that, I wish that he had questioned more when he was younger, but it's okay, because it's important that we live our lives according to how we believe, and that we don't live our lives trying to please our parents or trying to please our spouse. We need to be who we are and live what we believe, because we'll be healthier and happier then. And I just believe that, you know, it's good that his search and that he's questioning, that those are positive things. And so I embrace it.
Neat. Thank you so much. Okay, so salvation worries, yeah, a little bit, but you guys are trusting in good things. Another thing that sometimes will get in the way of a parent and a child, you know, being able to communicate or sort of find their equilibrium again after something like this, is that issue that's more of an external issue. So, for instance, Charlie, you began to talk about what would this effect be on the other children? Will they all of a sudden now start questioning as well? And obviously there's a piece of that, Jim, in your story with your other son and your daughter and whatnot. So you've done with this, and we'll hear from you, Terry, on that. So I'd like to hear a little bit more about, you know, worrying about that. But I also just, there are so many parents, at least we hear the stories of it, seems from the child's perspective that a parent will reject them because now that parent will feel conspicuous, that this sort of satisfaction or sort of status or prestige they get in the ward of having all active children and a bunch of bishops and who knows what, you know, all the different sort of status things come from, you know, bringing your children safely to Zion. Tell me about those interplays in your mind. So let's do a family as well as others, and any advice that you would have for parents who, you know, I mean, I'm guessing that each of you are going to acknowledge the reality of that as at least a piece of your experience. But I'd love to have you work through that out loud, if you don't mind.
Okay, so for my family dynamics, that was initially one of my biggest concerns, is how will my other three children handle this news? I really worried about that. Tyler had been away, you know, getting his education and doing an internship, and he hadn't been right here with the nucleus of the family, and you know, what are they going to think, and how will they handle it? He's always, you know, just been the perfect example of this oldest child who did everything, you know, was obedient, did everything right, never rebellious, whatever. And I knew that there was an element of, you know, them looking up to him. But so, you know, I think it was important, like I expressed before, the having that face-to-face conversation with him was so much more filled with love and understanding and compassion, because I could hear the peacefulness in his voice. And I, you know, there was just something about that. And so, you know, we talked about that, and he waited until the moment when he could have at least two of his siblings together to talk to them face to face. And it, you know, it was a tender and an emotional thing for several of us that were there, but you know, it was good. It was really hearing the story through his perception of it was much better than me trying to explain to my children what someone else had experienced. So it was important for me that he tell the story. And then it was some time later before he was able to meet with one of his other sisters who lived further away. But he was able to do that face to face. So good. I think they, you know, still have some questions. And I think occasionally one of them will ask me, so where's Tyler at, or how's he doing, or whatever. And I always encourage them to, you know, ask him. He's pretty open. He, you know, he doesn't mind talking about it, and would love it if you'd talk to him. So as far as the church goes, since he's not like living here in our ward or whatever, other than my really close friends, and Tyler had at some point given me permission, Mom, you know, you can talk to whoever you want to about this. You know, he kind of said, you know, this is probably something you're going to want to work through and talk about too. And I appreciated that. And I found that in the area that I live in, I have a lot of women that live right around me that are experiencing similar things with children, where their children, you know, they raise their kids in the church and their children just don't quite look like they thought they were going to when they raised their kids in the church. You know,
good way to say it.
Have this view of, you know, we're going to raise our kids in the church, we're going to do everything right, and someday my family's going to look like this. And so it's really interesting to me, actually, how many of us there are. We kind of have a little, you know, group where we get together and talk, and it's great for me to have people like that to talk to, because they, you know, I can explore different ideas and they don't judge me. They understand, and they know that it's difficult to, you know, try to figure all these things out, and I've really appreciated that. So, you know, there's still quite a few extended family members that aren't really aware of what Tyler's situation is. He's not out advertising it. And I think there's a part of him that's very sensitive to not wanting to do anything to destroy anyone else's faith. You know, so if somebody comes to him and asks him questions, he's more than happy to share his experience. But he's not out there trying to tell people, you know, I don't believe this anymore, or I don't believe this, and I do believe that. It's just not that, it's not in his nature. So, you know, that was kind of my experience.
But you probably, I mean, it's neat that you're finding other women, friends and whatnot to share that with. Is there any piece of it, though, of, and maybe it's not your wards necessarily because they're, but maybe your extended family or something where you're just like, I'm not ready to have this conversation with them, or that you're feeling like something difficult would be on the horizon for you?
I definitely do. I have some extended family members that I would, you know, I would just wouldn't open up and talk about it, because I just sense that it wouldn't be helpful, that I kind of feel like there might be some judgment and some misunderstanding, you know, because I myself feel differently about it. I haven't understood that some people actually leave the church because of reasons of integrity and those kind of things. It's not just that people want to go live a different lifestyle and they don't want the restrictions that you church. And so I myself have changed in the way I feel about that. And, you know, if these family members that I wouldn't necessarily broach it with had the opportunity to meet with Tyler, I wouldn't have any fear about it, because he presents himself so well. And it's so easy to understand when he tells the story. But there is something about me as a, you know, an outside person, a third party, whatever, trying to tell somebody else's story that I just think doesn't do it justice.
Yeah, that's a great way to point it, to put it. I think that's great. Jim, what about the externals? Do you feel conspicuous? Do you have wrestles with judgment from others?
No, but I certainly have learned myself now that I don't know. So many people are very fortunate with their children, and their children are just go follow the numbers and stay active and so forth, and they kind of think, well, I sure know how to do the job right. Well, I used to kind of have that little bit of a thought, too, when my kids were much younger. And then when we started to feel the cracks in the armor and so forth, it suddenly was very revealing to me that there's more to it than that. And anyways, I obviously no longer judge. But as regards how did the family take it when Randy left the church, they were more concerned about how I would take it. They seemed to be aware of it before me. One of my daughters was going to be going through the temple. She's getting married again, and at this time she's going to get married in the temple. And Randy was going to be there, except he really couldn't. And that's when it all came to a head officially. And my kids were overprotective of me. Because I really suspected all of that. I would have been stunned if he would have been able to go to the temple. But anyways, it all came to a head, and the family all agreed that Randy is still our son, our brother, and just a wonderful, wonderful person. And that hasn't changed, so long as he doesn't try to become argumentative about, you know, the changes he's made in his life, and try to persuade others, or else, you know, that sort of a deal. And he's accepted that, and that's not been a problem. Now, with regard to friends, when Randy was in our ward, he lived in our ward while he was going to dental school, and he was young men's advisor. He's been a scoutmaster. He's had a incredible impact on a lot of kids, a lot of people, and I haven't said a word about his situation. But if they come to me, then I will admit it and we'll discuss it very briefly. But not many people have done that, so that hasn't really been much of an issue. His leaving probably was a little tougher because I think the ward knew him much more than they did the others that that left. But we've worked it out, and we deal with it, and I think we have a wonderful family situation, that notwithstanding.
Thank you. Terry, any of the worries about how this might reflect on you to others?
I believe, and I'm not sure, but I think he talked it over with his younger brother before he talked to me. They're both very caring and don't want to upset me, and you know, very sensitive to me, and I respect that in them. And I know that his younger brother has a mind of his own too, so I'm not really worried about the influence. I mean, they're both at an age where, you know, they have to make their own choices and they have to decide for themselves what they do and don't believe. But as far as the judgments, I know that a lot of people are judgmental, but for me, right before Rex left on his mission, I remarried, and then we moved, and while he was on his mission, to another ward. So, and then afterwards he went to BYU and got married, and so really nobody in the ward really knows him. So if I was to talk to them about it, they wouldn't know who I was talking about. And as far as the family, I mean, his family, I believe that there would not be judgments. I grew up in a family where we respected opposite opinions about things, and we disagreed agreeably with each other. And I know my mom every year would kind of joke and say, "Well, I got to hurry and go vote so I can cancel out whatever your father voted for," you know. So I grew up in a home where we were free to be who we were and to express our feelings and things. And I know that in the family that I've married into, I'm not so sure it's that way. And so I haven't discussed it with them, but then I haven't really had the opportunity. They don't really get together very often or anything. So if it comes up, I'll be happy to talk about it. I know I'll be judged on it by some of them, but you can't. I'm a strong person too, and so to me it's like, you know, if they want to judge, they're going to judge. I mean, you're not going to take away their free agency either. You know, it's all about free agency, and we're all making choices, and they have to make their choices, and I need to go on with my life.
You know, it reminds, or there's this thought that I'm having, you know, too, that, and again, I'm saying this from the perspective of somebody who's had his own faith crisis and whatnot, and I have this same situation with my oldest son, who's not active in the church and things like that, but it's been 6 or 7 years, and it was just so organic with him that we kind of sensed that this just wasn't taking with him, and yet he's just this amazing, you know, big heart, wonderful kid. So for me, I haven't dealt with it in this conspicuous way or something like that. But on the other hand, there's this, I would love to say to anybody who's having this, and especially if this were a parent listening to this and their child maybe pointed to this, you know, that initial judgment may come, but would you guys say in some ways that the longer that you stay loud and proud and supportive and here's my child and look at his goodness, etc., you can make a huge change, you know, and model. Oh, yes. You're modeling something. So, and some of it's almost like a calling of being the parent of a wayward child that I think can actually be very influential in a community.
A great example, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Okay, just a weird observation there, but thanks. Let me go there a little bit. I guess the main thing that I want to hear from you before we come to a close is here, and this is really the impact of this on your own journey? We've already gotten glimpses of it, but your own spirituality, your own faith, has it opened up questions for you? Jim, you've shared with us some things that have brought comfort to you, but were there other things that, you know, you now view the gospel differently through it? Or, you know, I'm getting a sense that all of you, especially the two women, Jim, you can correct me here. Are you glad you're going through this or not? So those are the kinds of questions I would love to have you just take as much time as you want to just sort of reflect on. How has your spirituality changed? How has your view of Mormonism or any piece of this changed because of what you've gone through? Jerilee?
Okay. I think I'm not so black and white. I think I was kind of a hold to the rod person, you know, an iron rodder. And I think I see a lot
just,
of
just the
there.
Fact that you know the term iron rodder
I know.
Says about how big a journey you
tells
actually
you
got.
About where I've been, huh? Yeah. So, and I, you know, I'm good with that. I'm good with that. I've had, you know, really positive experiences in the church. I mean, the Mormon story still explains who I am better than any other story I know. It's, you know, it's my tribe, as Joanna would say. And, you know, I'm here because I want to be here, but I do see that there's areas that we need work on. I have two really close friends that have sons that are gay, and I see how much work we have to do in that area to make these people feel loved. And, you know, things are getting better, but, you know, I do have questions about a lot of things. And from a fairly early age, I was troubled about polygamy. And I remember, you know, asking my mom things, and I got, you know, the answers that were the only ones that she knew. She did the best she could that were kind of the standard answers then. And I, you know, kept putting my little polygamy jar back up on the shelf. And, you know, after this happened with Tyler, as I was kind of looking into lots of things, and that does not happen to be one of his hangups at all. But, you know, I've dug into it a little bit more, and I've done a little bit more research. And, you know, the more I learn, the less it makes sense to me. So I have to learn to live with a little bit of, you know, uncertainty in my life that about those things. And, you know, I choose faith. If it's a choice, I don't know, maybe that's a matter of opinion. Maybe it's a gift and you either get it or you don't. I don't know, but I choose faith. And there's a lot of things that I can't say that I know for sure. And I think that, as a whole, you know, we have things that we could be better about within our tribe. So I don't know if that answers
that's great. What about like, what gives you the most peace and the most calm? You've probably given a sense before, so maybe you feel like you've addressed it. But just again, is it just the peace that you get when you still know of his goodness? Is it some change that now all of a sudden you realize, well, if I can embrace him as a child, as a parent, so could Heavenly Father? I'm just trying to get, you know, where did you go in your heart? You know, where has it taken you in your relationship with God?
You know, my experiences in the church, my experiences of having, you know, lived my whole life within this story are that I feel a love from God. I feel a connection. I feel the Spirit. I feel these things that I have a trust and a faith that all will be well. And I don't really have all the answers to how that's going to work out. But, I don't give up on the fact that we could still all be together one day, no matter, you know, whether he chooses to stay in the church or not. I mean, that's very much a part of, and I would think that he would tell you that he at least has that hope, right? So, I just kind of a calmness, I guess, that I feel like comes from my having been raised in the church and my involvement and serving in the church of that it's all going to be okay somehow. I don't maybe know all the answers, but I feel like it's all going to work out. And we need to, you know, spend as much time as we can loving each other and have fun and spending time together in this life while we have it. So that's, you know, that's kind of where I go with that.
Wonderful. Let me ask the question I sort of hinted at as a guess. I guess no one really welcomes a trial into their life, and I guess you could call this a trial. But overall, are you kind of glad you're on this journey?
That is really an interesting question. You know, that's one that Tyler approached with me once. He came downstairs. He was staying at my house one morning. He said, it was just the two of us. And he said, you know, Mom, there was a time when I wished I could put it all back in the box. You know, I just wished it would go away. I could put it all back in the box and forget that it happened. And then he looked at me and basically in his own words said, you know, I'm at peace with it now. And this is who I am. And this is a part of my journey. And, you know, and it's a journey for me too. It's a journey for all of us in our family. You know, we're kind of figuring out how to deal with this. And I've been really proud of my kids so far, all of us, you know, in figuring out how to love and honor people and not think less of them because they think they feel differently. So yeah, I think it has helped me grow. You know, transitions and growth are difficult. And they force us to face ourselves and other people in different ways that are new. And sometimes they're painful. But yes, I am grateful because I think that it does help me to become a better person and a more understanding and caring and compassionate person in the end.
Wonderful. Thank you. Jim, I'll let you just riff however you'd like on that whole business of, you know, what do you think? What gives you the strength, and are you glad, or are you kind of wishing this one had passed you by?
Well, when my first wife passed away, I obviously didn't want her to pass away, but out of it came an incredible gift of the last 10 days of her life, which were the best 10 days of our 33-year marriage, where we got to talk about stuff that you don't talk about when you're going through life. And I wouldn't trade that experience for anything, but I didn't want her to die. And I didn't want Randy or the other two kids to leave the church, but I have grown from it. I have learned from it. I have been humbled by it. And I think I'm a better person for having had to deal with it and have been able to be a support to other people. Is like learn that they're going through the same kind of a situation where we can talk, and I even got a whole pile of millet talks that I've given out to some of the people that have found a measure of comfort in his words. But yes, I'm a better person. I'm a more mature person, spiritually mature person, but again, that's life. We don't get to dial in what we want out of life. God gives us the challenges, and then we have to face them, and through it, we grow to love him, and my testimony has grown, my testimony as a result of what has happened with some of my children has not been diminished whatsoever. And I just have the faith that at some point in time, not my time, God's time, that the things will turn out, that these kids will come back, and I have faith in that.
Is that they will come back the only acceptable answer? I mean, I know that like a lot of you know, somebody who might be struggling will say, well, why wouldn't you need to come my direction? Versus I eventually have to go back your way. Is there a sense that they would ever get from you that you're putting up a, you know, you're the broken one and therefore you'll eventually have to heal rather than me? Or
no, this is the only venue where I say it like this.
Okay.
I mean, no, I don't talk to them like that. I don't, I just tell them that I have the faith that things will work out and so forth. In my mind, in time, that they'll come back. That's my personal faith and so forth. And we shall see.
Yeah. Trust an agency and help to self-direct, yeah.
Listen, that McKay quote about agency being the second greatest gift of God, that backed me off quite a bit. Because when you think about it, if the church is true and the stories are true and so forth, I mean, God lost a third of his children before they came down here, and how many sins? and he loves us all, and he does whatever he can for us as we'll let him do it. And I just have, you know, if he can be that patient and give us our agency to do what we do, then who am I to say no? I'm going to rise above that, and I'm going to what have you. And I've seen people in our ward who have been quite forceful in their kids and with their kids and so forth. And I think at some point in time they'll pay a price for that.
Definitely. Thank you. That's an important reminder. Terry, we're excited to hear from you. Just how's this affected your spiritual journey, and how does it tip the scales for you?
Well, you know, it made me pause, and I remember asking him, well, what have you discovered? You know, what did you uncover? Because I figured, you know, he had unearthed something that I was unaware of, or some principle or something. But it really wasn't that. And so it did give me pause to think, and, do I really have a testimony of this? Do I really, you know, and I did take an internal look at myself and what I had a testimony in. And I'm still very strong in my feelings. But you see, I feel like it's too bad that he hasn't had some of the experiences I've had that have brought me to the point where I feel so strongly about the church. But, you know, like I wasn't, my early years, I wasn't a member of the church. And I remember what it was like not having the gospel in my family. I remember those things. He's always had the gospel in his life. And so to me, it's like, well, he just hasn't had the experiences I've had. And he needs to go through life in his own way. And I just embrace free agency. And as I understood it, we jump for joy for having free agency, and we didn't want to be told what to do, and so it's something that I still embrace now, and yet I know it can be difficult. I remember when my sons were really little, I couldn't wait till they could dress themselves, comb their own hair, and things like that, and then they got to the teenage stage, and it was like, oh my goodness, what would I do to be able to comb their hair? So I think that free agency, yes, we love it. We want to choose for ourselves. We don't want to be told what to do all the time. And so sometimes that means that people around us will make choices that we might not agree with. But I just think that love does. We just love them anyways. And you know, we're here to help each other. We're here to be there for each other, and that's really what it's all about. And these people that go on these afterlife experiences, and then they say the biggest thing is love. And I just think that it's important that we embrace one another and stop judging one another and just be there for one another. And as we go through life, we're all going to go through this earth life experience differently. And we're going to experience things differently. And so our learning curves are all different, and we have a maker at the end who is going to judge us on our hearts, and it's all going to be fair. It's all going to be good. And so I trust in the Lord with all my heart that things are going to work as they should.
Awesome. Thank you. And I'm guessing that, again, you wouldn't have chosen this particular trial, but overall you're finding good things come out of it, at least in terms of just opening you up in different new ways?
Well, no one would choose this, but I do remember thinking, oh, isn't this interesting? Now I'm going to go through this experience, and I'm going to learn how to be, what this feels like, and I'll have more compassion for other people, because I feel like I've gone through so many experiences. I've sat down and thought about all the different things I've gone through. And the Lord just, I just feel like the more experiences I have like this, the better, I'm a better person, because I learn different things from these kinds of things. And even though I wouldn't want this, and I wouldn't want a lot of things that happened to me in my lifetime, those things that were hardest of all have always taught me the most and helped me to be a better person. So
yeah,
I can only trust that this will make me a better person.
Oh man, I have loved this conversation, you guys. Thank you so much. You're modeling this wonderful perspectives that I know that there's going to be many people who listen to this podcast that will be sad to say that this isn't the experience I'm having with my parents. But I also know that there's going to be many people that will feel emboldened to, well, I do need to be honest with my parents. I need to share some things with them. And I know that that doesn't mean that everyone who listens to this podcast is going through doubt and you know, things like that. But I do think there's this shared sort of adventurousness to everyone who kind of tunes into things like this that says, I know that as much as I love things that I learned as a child, I need to grow into wider and deeper perspectives. And sometimes that will take you on a circuitous journey. Sometimes it will simply stay within a more typical framework, but with broader, bigger ideas. And so you guys are modeling that and a wonderful thing. So I just want to give you all each a final chance to say anything either about your sons or about this journey or any advice that you just haven't had a chance to share. What would you say to close, Charlie?
I just have this little quote by Joseph Campbell that I love, and it's, We must be willing to let go of the life we've planned so as to have the life that is waiting for us. And, you know, some days you wake up and it's just like any other day. And then one day you wake up and everything seems to have changed. And that's kind of the way I felt with this, you know, like everything's changed. I have a new normal and, you know, it's challenging and yet it's good. And I, you know, of course, want the best for my son and his wonderful family, and I adore them as I do all of my children. And you know, it's presented a new frontier for all of us. And you know, most of all, let love guide our lives. I think that's the most important thing. And I heard somebody say once that I'm far from what I once was, but not yet what I'm going to be. So it definitely leaves me the feeling of you know, I have things that I need to work on and get and be better and make improvements. And so, and I think that's what this life's all about, right? We're trying to become. It's all about what we're becoming. So I appreciate this opportunity, and I hope that it will help people that might find themselves in a similar situation as any of us, whether they're on the struggling end or whether they're a parent who, you know, doesn't quite know what to do with it. There's other people out there who have, you know, shared in this kind of experience, and I'd love to be there for somebody if they ever wanted to chat.
Neat.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you. Gosh, love it. Jim, what would you say in conclusion?
Gosh, I don't know what else to say. I've said everything that I've had in mind, other than I appreciate this opportunity to talk and to share with these two fine sisters their stories. It's interesting to hear other people's stories because we sort of get wrapped up in our own little world sometimes and don't realize that there are others that are going through this in their own way and in the, you know. But anyways, I thank you for this opportunity and I hope it has been of some help somewhere, somehow.
It has. Thank you so much, Jim. And again, thank you for putting up with doing this when you're still not feeling well. Terry, what would you say in conclusion?
I just want to throw one little thought out there. We believe that our kids are capable of choosing to be baptized and making that important covenant when they're 8. And so I think it's important that we realize that as they get older, they are still capable of making choices. And I think if we look at all of ourselves, our lives, this earth life is not supposed to be perfect. We're supposed to make mistakes. We're supposed to fumble along the way. And we're supposed to learn from our mistakes. And we're supposed to learn from each other. And I just think that it's important for us always to be there for each other and to love one another and to help each other and not necessarily judge, but just really unconditional love. Just it's really about being the best we can with the experiences that we've had and gaining more experiences along the way and doing the best we can with our lives and trying to be good people in whatever form that takes us in and accepting each other. And I think that that's the most important thing that I've learned from this experience.
Thank you. Thank you.
Amen,
so much.
Terry.
Amen to everything. So thank you, everybody, for being part of this. Mormon Matters listeners, thanks for all that you do. Thanks for the conversations that we have online. Thanks for your good financial support. It really means the world to the podcast to keep it going. And I promise there's actually I'm recording this on one day. I'm recording another one tomorrow and another one the next day. So in the next 10 days, I'm going to try to release three podcasts and catch us back up a little bit, because we had some delays on this one, and then just the holidays, and I had the gombu or whatever you'd want to call it, weird multi-symptom stuff. So we're going to be back on a regular schedule, and I'm just excited that this is the one that we're kicking off the 2013 season with. So thank you, everybody. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Terry. Thanks, Geralee.
Sweet.
You're welcome.
Thank you all. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Cue the music.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive, or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.
And joy.